Okay. List channeling is basically the ability to open yourself as a receiver of information as well as a transmitter, very similar to the way crystals work, more so quartz crystals, and receiving information either from your higher self or a higher intelligence and being able to impart that information either in trance, which is what I do, or consciously, which I believe just about everybody does in some or other way. I believe creative inspiration is a form of receiving information that could be channeled from the higher self or an entity of higher wisdom for a specific purpose. I believe that not everybody has the ability to trance voice channel, because we've also got to look at what a person's contract is in this lifetime. And based on astrology charts that I've had done and numerology charts, my contract in this lifetime is trance voice channeling. So not everybody has the same contract, but people can channel the most incredible creative energy that can bring healing to people's lives. I believe musicians, fine artists, I mean, all levels of creativity are an aspect of channeling. And it's not limited to the creative arts. It can go into the healing of people with disease. It can be an incredible mother that has the most awesome relationship with her children. It could be a businessman who has the most awesome knack of dealing with his staff in such a graceful and respectful way that he brings out the very best in them, or she brings out the very best in them. So channeling is, I believe it to be a very wide area of taking energy or receiving energy and information from the universe and using it to its best and fullest potential.
Well, all of the recent research into the zero-point field, quantum physics, and investigating the concept of non-locality would then relate very, very closely to what you're describing, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. It would, yes.
Basically, both coming from a point that there is no separation, you know, the metaphysicians, like yourself, stating that, you know, that you can access that information even if it's not right here inside you, or actually it is inside you, but that idea of non-local information available to all of us. And the atheists are saying the same thing, that separation is an illusion. And that's the theme of this show. So would you speak about that?
With pleasure. You know, it's very interesting that you've asked that question, Liz, because just this week, in fact, I think it was Wednesday, I had the most incredible experience where sitting in a very sort of sacred space of stillness within myself, I touched on that bliss point. I mean, that's one of the things you can call it. And I felt the most incredible peace and bliss. In that moment, I knew that is what I've been looking for my whole life. And everything I've done up until this point has been just to experience this, and this is what I want to experience for the rest of my life. But the most awesome thing that came of that was, in that moment, I felt that connectedness to everything. You know, you hear it so many times. We are all one. You are connected to everything. Everything is a part of you. And Liz, until you felt it, it's very, very difficult to actually understand, because you can understand it intellectually, but unless you've actually felt it, you can never experience its full meaning. And in that moment of realization or actual feeling of being connected to absolutely everything, I also realized that absolutely everything around me is just expressing me. So whatever my consciousness is, my attitude, my belief systems, everything around me is going to express that straight back to me, because it's a part of me and it cannot be any other way. And I feel that is how we create our reality, based on what we believe, how we feel, what we choose to invest our energy in, then determines what everything around us feeds back to us, because all it is doing is simply expressing what we are, because it is us.
Some of the messages that you've brought through have been incredibly empowering and enlightening. Some of the is also contain information on how to actually work with the prevailing energies of the time. And also, there are patients, advice, and generally initiations, basically, into the process of empowering people to give life to the belief that more than they ever thought possible about what they're able to achieve is possible. How does it feel for you to bring messages of this importance through to the planet?
You know, Liz, I've been asked that question so many times, and you know, I think there's the impact of what I'm doing hasn't really sunk home. And even though it's been 10 years since I started doing this professionally, I understand the absolute amazing thing that I'm doing, and I see how it's changing people's lives and how awesome it is. And I am extremely humbled to be doing it. But to be really honest with you, Liz, the full impact of what I'm doing hasn't completely sunk in. So I'm still very, very much a part of, you know, living life every day, four children, running a business, friends, family. I'm a very down-to-earth person. So in that sense, it's, yeah, I can do it. It's wonderful. It's what Spirit has blessed me with. But sure, I don't know more than that. So, yeah, it's odd. It's strange. But I think maybe that's what keeps me grounded, because that's one of the intentions I've always held, is that whatever I'm doing to serve Spirit always keeps me grounded and, you know, it doesn't go to my head and become, you know, a whole glamour, ego trip kind of thing. So,
tell me when it was that you were awakened to the knowledge that this was going to be your life's mission?
Liz, I caught a glimpse of it in my mid-teens, but I didn't understand it at all. And it was quite evident as I moved into my late teens and early 20s, where people of all walks of life and much, much older than me would gravitate towards me and start pouring out their heart to me. And I would come back with information which I thought, oh my goodness, where did that come from? I mean, my life was a mess, to put it mildly. And I couldn't understand how these people were coming to me who was going through so much trauma and so much abuse, and I was coming up with this information, giving it to them, but I could not apply it in my own life as yet. So it was very confusing. I was in an extremely abusive marriage, all levels of abuse that you can think of, and it was a very disempowering 9 years of my life. However, about 3 years before I actually left the marriage permanently, I came across a very, very empowering book written by Louise L. Hay, You Can Heal Your Life. And that book really turned a page for me.
It's turned a page for a lot of people, hasn't it? It was actually,
it's been amazing.
Yeah, it was one of the very first books I read as a teenager when I started looking into this field.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I don't even know if Louise L. Hay actually realizes how many people's lives she literally saved with that book, because I believe had I stayed in that relationship, I probably wouldn't be here physically now. You know, it was just it would have gone really from bad to worse, and the violence was quite shocking. So when I eventually got to the level of self-empowerment and inner belief, that, you know, sufficient to actually empower me to get out of the relationship, that was when my life changed. I mean, I went through 18 months of absolute harassment and torture from him after I divorced him, because he just actually couldn't believe that I'd done it. But there was a power driving me that I cannot explain to anybody until this day, that there was absolutely no way I was going back. It was a force pushing me. It was like pushing me into my life and into my future, and nothing was going to hold me back. And I took my only child at that time with me. He was 8 when I left his father. And there and then I made the decision that I was never going to create this again, and I wanted to heal my life. And I started doing some very in-depth processes with a metaphysical therapist. And in those processes, I met a consciously Nick Gattuni for the first time.
Can I just interrupt you there? What do you mean by consciously met?
I felt him consciously. There was the conscious connection. It wasn't a case of just, you know, getting information, not knowing where it's coming from, carrying on with life, not having that spirit connection. So in the sessions, it was I actually, for the first time, consciously experienced that higher intelligence presence, if I can call it that. And that presence was called Gattuni, as I have got to know him. It was that feeling of a presence so full of love, and a presence that I could feel so safe in to actually continue on my path of healing. And the realization that this is the presence that has been with me for as long as I could remember, the presence that I had felt before but didn't understand or didn't recognize. So it was quite awesome in that sense, because then I decided that I wanted to explore my relationship with spirit, the overwhelming desire just to serve God. I mean, I remember waking up in the mornings and saying, "Here, God, I'm your instrument. Do whatever you need to do with me to wake people up and to bring light to the planet." I didn't realize what I was asking for, but I did. And, you know, being an instrument is not always, you know, to bring light to that is not always fun, because then you find yourself in positions as a catalyst. And if you don't understand what that entails, it can be quite disheartening and disillusioning and heartbreaking. So I really had to learn about what I was asking for and what it meant to create a relationship with spirit. And, you know, saying, please, you know, I want peace in my life. All I want to do is serve God, and I want to be this amazing, this, that, and the next thing. Also not realizing at that point that because I've asked that, I had to look at everything in my life that was causing disharmony, that was preventing me from having the peace and being a clear vessel for God to work through. So that became intense as well. And oh my goodness, my pawpaw hit the fan a couple of times, and you thought, oh my God, what's going on? This can't be it. You know, it's supposed to be this wonderful path of bliss and joy and happiness, and nothing ever goes wrong and everything's just perfect. Whereas it was the complete opposite, because you've got to look at the chaos in order to manifest the peace. And then it doesn't matter what chaos is going on, because you're at peace. And the other thing is, when you're at peace, then no longer do you create the chaos around you. So, Jesus. It was quite something. And still today, 10 years down the line, I still put my hands in my head in my face and think to myself, I mean my hands on my face and think, oh my goodness, this is a big fat cosmic joke. The universe is laughing at me.
Warm greetings to your hearts once again. It's time for another 2-hour fantastic voyage into otherwhere. Thanks for joining me. My name's Liz Miller, and I hope you've all had a great week. Since we were together last, I've been getting a long overdue project off the ground. And along with a good friend and healer, we've invited about 15 of our acquaintances to join an esoteric book club / meditation circle here in Melbourne. Whether you love to read esoteric literature or just love to read, I highly recommend it. Not one for the faint-hearted, our first book is Barbara Hand Cloud's 2004 release, Alchemy of the Nine Dimensions. decoding the vertical axis, crop circles, and the Mayan calendar. And even though I've devoured it before on my own, having the group to bounce ideas off has been excellent. And this little collective we've got going has helped me feel more supported too. If you consider yourself someone who works with the light, then holding this type of space with others is needed more than ever right now. For me personally, having the group to meditate with on a regular basis is terrific, and I just love the feeling of the group energy during the meditations. And if you've ever doubted that we live in incredible times, then I hope that this week's show will start to change that, as we'll be talking about a subject that's very close to my heart, Dr. Masaru Emoto's inspirational work with the hidden messages in water. Through the revolutionary findings of this Japanese researcher into the consciousness of water, we've now got more evidence than ever to prove that each one of us does have a magical ability to change the world with our thoughts, feelings, and intentions. We'll be bringing one of the very first to be qualified Hado instructors, Anna Webb, to the phones later in the show. She was qualified recently when Dr. Emoto facilitated a week-long course in Hawaii in February. She'll be letting us in on what it's like to train with Dr. Emoto, what Hado is, and she'll give us practical tips on how we can use our intentions with water in our everyday lives to create personal and planetary well-being. And no sooner had I spoken last week about how tame the weather was in Australia than we got Katrina strength category Hurricane Larry, which ravaged the coast of far north Queensland, 80 kilometres or 49 miles south of Cairns on the 23rd of March. Power is slowly being restored to the 21,000 homes in the area, with schools reopening and plumbing said to be working again over the next few days, so that's a great sign. And from news.com.au, we have a report that former Australian Chief Defence General Peter Cosgrove has toured these areas of North Queensland affected by Cyclone Larry, likening the devastation to that seen in war zones. General Cosgrove said that the destruction was what he had expected based on his experience of Cyclone Tracy in Darwin and the Box tsunami in Indonesia. General Cosgrove said that the destruction of facilities and all the amenities here have been pretty substantial, but thank heavens without the loss of life we had in Banda Aceh in Indonesia. The former Australian Defence Force chief said it looked like the community had come under enemy fire. All the roofs were off, everything inside was wrecked, shrapnel holes from other objects were in the sides of the structures, and it looked as if somebody took it under shell fire. And in more dramatic news, the big news this week, of course, is that Charlie Sheen spoke out publicly about some of the questions he has regarding 9/11 on Alex Jones's Genesis Communications Network radio show. And for the first time ever on mainstream media, CNN's Showbiz Tonight gave some decent coverage to this subject at last, bringing it to the attention of millions. And although I steer clear of politics on this show, preferring to use our time together to focus on what each one of us can do to change our inner world, to create change in the outer one, I was pretty excited when I saw the clip from the show and saw Charlie Sheen and, of course, Alex Jones going hell for leather, trying to squeeze out as many words per minute his mouth could speak to really get people thinking. BBS Radio, as you know, is all about transforming the power of the media into a vehicle to serve the highest good of humankind, but it's a reaction against the current state of affairs in the media worldwide. And our type of programming is still pretty unique in the world. We're really only part of a small handful of other networks like this, but I know that all of us want a more enlightened media, especially media environment in the United States, as it affects the rest of the world. And I had to express how grateful I am that this is a trend that is finally seeming to be growing, especially in the mainstream. Former Otherwhere guest Fred Burks writes, "Many of us who have spent long hours investigating what happened on 9/11 believe that once the media starts playing their role to educate the public on these vital matters, people will unite to demand accountability and the release of vast amounts of documents and videos the government is concealing. For the first time, CNN is now playing that role in a big way. We encourage you to contact CNN to show your support by contacting them at www.cnn.com and then click on feedback." And the real reason why I wanted to mention this story is because I am so grateful to see the people out there like Alex Jones, like Charlie Sheen, like Fred Burks. I respect Alex's work a hell of a lot, And his story is a brilliant example of what one person can do to change the world if you just keep believing in yourself and persevering. It's so good to see someone who has spoken their truth and stood in their own light finally get some recognition for all of their hard work. So glad that Alex is shining now. And full props as well to Charlie Sheen for saying in public what so many people have been thinking in private. And a final word on the story, perhaps these breakthroughs are happening now because each one of us individually is doing some changing inside. Maybe through our collective efforts, these types of breakthroughs will continue to keep occurring. And for those cetacean lovers out there, it's been discovered that the songs of the humpback whale are among the most complex in the animal kingdom. Researchers have now mathematically confirmed that whales have their own syntax that uses sound units to build phrases that can be combined to form songs that last for hours. And although it's not new news for people who love whales, I know it's great to have some confirmation from the scientists. Until now, only humans have demonstrated the ability to use such a hierarchical structure of communication. The research, published online in the March 2006 issue of the Journal of Acoustical Society of America, offers a new approach to studying animal communication. Humpback songs are not like human language, but elements of language are seen in their songs, said Ryuji Suzuki, a Howard Hughes Medical Institute pre-doctoral fellow in neuroscience at Massachusetts Institute of Technology and first author of the paper. With limited sight and sense of smell in water, marine animals are more dependent on sound, which travels four times faster in water than air, to communicate. For 6 months a year, all male humpback whales in a population sing the same song during mating season. Thought to attract females, the song evolves over time. And I've heard Joan Ocean talking about this. It seems that all of the males learn the song from the older males, and it changes over the course of a season, and over the next season the new song gets passed along. It's pretty amazing. They go on to say that the structure of the humpback whale song is repetitive and rigid. The whales repeat unique phrases, short and long segments to craft a song. And this next story is pretty amazing, but it has implications that could be dangerous, especially if you're into arm wrestling when you're drunk at parties. I think you can categorise this one into the oh my god, they finally did it category. Scientists make bionic muscles. Yes, they've developed artificial super strength muscles which are powered by alcohol and hydrogen. And they could eventually be used to make more advanced prosthetic limbs, say researchers at the University of Texas. They say these artificial muscles are 100 times more powerful than the body's own. They said they could even be used in exoskeletons to give superhuman strength to certain professions, such as firefighters, soldiers, astronauts, and arm wrestlers. Two types of muscle are being investigated by the US researchers at the Nanotech Institute, working with colleagues from South Korea. Both release the chemical energy of fuels such as hydrogen and alcohol while consuming oxygen. In effect, they're replicating the first stage in breathing, taking in oxygen, although the existing form of the artificial muscles are driven by batteries. However, neither of these types developed by the Texan researchers resembles a normal muscle, being made up of wires, cantilevers, and glass bottles. The artificial muscles mimic nature in a number of ways, but the now is to create a circulation system like that of humans that replaces the wires in the artificial muscles. Now that could be a little bit trickier. And for those of you out there who've always wished they could go to school to find out what they should do if a UFO happens to land in front of them, perhaps the people over in Russia can lend us a hand, as Russian researchers open a UFO school for lovers of the paranormal. Russian ufologists have opened a school where they teach people what to do if they encounter a UFO and where to look for extraterrestrials. The commotion over UFO sightings in central Russia's Togliatti began this summer when crop circles appeared in a field just outside the city. The enormous pictogram in the grass attracted dozens of journalists and hundreds of curious onlookers. In response to the demand, local UFO researchers decided to establish a school where people would learn about the paranormal. Tatiana Markova, chairwoman for the Togliatti Ufology Commission, said that in response to the evident demand, "We know of several places in Togliatti where UFO sightings are frequent, and we're responding to the evident demand. We have studied several of the most popular flying saucer routes. We have often visited the places where UFOs were sighted and filmed the phenomena we saw. For instance, we have lots of video footage featuring the so-called Belgium Triangles. They are frequent visitors to our city. At the UFO school, experts give lectures on various types of anomalies, the correct behaviour in case of encounter with a UFO, and basic guidelines on UFO watching. After all the theory is done, the students go out to practice their skills." Now, I wonder what the quote, correct behaviour in case of an encounter with a UFO is. And in a related story from Down Under, a UFO was captured on film hovering high in the city sky. This was reported on the 10th of March, a black triangular object that made a number of movements and then speared off out of sight behind the trees was how police described footage to be claimed of an unidentified flying object that was reported to police and shot on video camera by a family in Dubbo in New South Wales. Suzanne Fuller, one of the witnesses, said, "I've never seen anything like it. It was hovering there for 5 hours and it was completely silent. The police arrived to the scene at 8 p.m, viewed the videotape and filed an official report to Air Services Australia, a Federal Airways Monitoring Bureau. It looked like a bird, but much larger, the size of a car, with a flat top and a deeper shape at the bottom. Now remember, it was still daylight at 7 p.m, she said. Mrs. Fuller said that together with her husband and their three daughters, they continued watching until after 11 p.m. Once the sun set, there was a light, like from a lighthouse, flashing on and off every couple of seconds. The police were here and they said that they had never seen anything like it before either. Every now and then, it would move to the left and then back to the same spot. Duty officer Inspector Alan Cusack said that the ASA told police that there were numerous reports of objects flying in the southern regions of Australia. And the sighting is not the first one in Dubbo. In 2002, a woman reported seeing an object as large as a house hovering in the sky about 500 metres off the ground and allegedly moving and changing colours. Mrs. McGee said that another sighting 10 years ago had a number of people in Dubbo report seeing an object as big as a supermarket in the sky. And in new energy news, it looks like some ancient technology is being revived, or at least being rethought, as Singapore-based technology firm MSC Power Corp is building its first pyramid sun-driven wind power station in India and aims to list this year on NASDAQ in an initial public offering that says it could be worth more than $5 billion. MSC has designed a pyramid-shaped power plant that draws in ambient air and heats it through solar power and solar heat to drive turbines. The heat is also used to warm stored water, which can reduce the electricity needed to electrolyze it to produce cooking gas and to desalinate water for drinking. The small scale of the power generation, which at the moment is 36 megawatts with the current design, meant it was more suitable for rural areas than for powering cities, but a 10 megawatt pyramid plant would be about 45 metres high and take up about 2,500 square metres of space, including an associated desalination plant, which is a lot less than the requirements for wind farms. The company is also hoping to build more power plants in Chennai, in India, Sudan, as well as Malaysia, China and Thailand. Apparently they want to build at least 1,000 of these things. And that's all the news for this week. Make sure you get the links to these by joining the Otherwhere Network, where you can also get updates for the show at www.groups.yahoo.com/group/Otherwhere. And stay tuned for Otherwhere, because later in the show I'll be taking you on a guided journey into progressive relaxation using this week's theme, water, to relax your entire body, calm your mind and nurture your spirit. And you can do it all from the comfort of your own home. Just find somewhere where you can get comfortable and where you won't be disturbed to relax your entire body after the week, calm your mind and nurture your spirit. We'll be coming right back with Anna Webb after this break to dive deep into the subject of the consciousness of water. But before I go, I thought I'd share a great email I received during the week from probably one of the last places on the planet, but it was a great surprise and I'd like to share it with you. Dear Liz, I live in the desert in northern South Australia, holding the balance near grid point 44 and a gatekeeper here. I have an Ascension Cafe on the intersection of the Unadatta track and the Strzelecki track, two of the great song lines of the Seven Sisters Dreaming. So interested to hear of your love of house music. Even though I'm 55, I know in my heart that this, as well as the later hip-hop, is completely guided to activate the beautiful kids as Gregorian plain chant once entranced the oldies. And if that wasn't enough to knock my socks off, then she goes on to say that she went and checked out Yonosha's Codes, one of my guests last week, and says, immediate whoopee factor there. Some of them are blueprints for the Ediacaran fossils found in this area where, as the local Aborigines tell, life began, will end and begin again, ground zero. With love and blessings, Fiona, Urani Rainbow Woman. What a great email. If you would like to email me, it's lizmusic@iprimus.com.au or follow the link from the other web page on the bbsradio.com website. And now let's have a listen to some of that house music I love so much. Why do I love it? Well, it's hard to say. House is just a feeling. This one's a brand new release from Anthony Nicholson, who has turned out some fine releases over the years, and this one is no exception. It's a bit of an epic, coming in at just under 10 minutes, so I won't get to play it all, but the way it keeps changing throughout is unreal. Here it is from Anthony Nicholson, Anthem Noir. We'll be right back. About 5 years ago, Anna Webb became familiar with Dr. Masaru Emoto's research into the many unique aspects of one of our most precious natural resources, water. Ever since, she's been convinced that water is not only a living being, but just like humans, it has a memory and possesses the potential to heal. Anna recently took the opportunity to study under Dr. Emoto and became a certified Hado instructor. She will now be conducting seminars and lectures on Hado, the messages from water, and manifesting reality through positive intent. Her intent is to assist Dr. Emoto in spreading his message. She's also a career-minded individual and single mum, raising 3 kids who are now grown, who's worked her way up the corporate ladder to, quote, only to find it's quite empty up there. She took the Silver Effective Sensory Perception Training in 2005 and the Edgar Cayce Foundation Intuition Training in 2004 through ARE in Virginia. She's also been sick since childhood and is a highly skilled tarot reader. Like many other people who've moved into these same types of studies, she says she just knew going forward it would be best to have some training to appease the people who come to her for assistance and guidance. She states, I always direct them back to themselves anyway and suggest they look inward for the answers. Anna was born in Dayton, Ohio and now resides near Hilo on the Big Island of Hawaii.
Welcome to Otherwhere, Anna. It's wonderful to speak to you.
Thank you so much, Liz. I appreciate it. It's my pleasure.
Well, you must be pretty excited. You're one of only 90 Hado practitioners that are certified in the world, making you one of the very first.
It was an excellent opportunity. I almost don't know what to say about that. It was one of those quantum moments when you read something and suddenly you know that you're going to be able to be a part of it before it's happened. So it was very exciting.
Well, let's talk about Dr. Emoto. Who is he and what exactly is his message?
Dr. Emoto, he began with Hado measuring technology. And I'll go into explaining what Hado is here in a little bit, but he also has coined the water crystal photography technology, but his main message, Liz, is world peace. He's trying to spread the message of peace throughout the world, and he believes that water is the medium in order to do that, that we and water have such a close-knit relationship that we can utilize water to literally make a change. So he's one of his goals is he created a children's book called The Message from Water. It's in both English and Japanese, and his intention is to print 650 million of these and give them away to the world's children by 2008. So I think his message is he's trying to target children in order to teach them the importance of water and our relationship to it.
Oh, wouldn't it have been wonderful if, as school children, we had been given a book like that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Our world would be such a different place today.
Right, right. I think of that every time I'm trying to, you know, I'll be doing the dishes or being very conscious of not letting the water run, because in the area that I was raised and grew up, you know, we would just turn the faucet on and walk away, you know, fun. I mean, and not really think. And if you're not taught how precious water is from a young age, then, you know, it takes a while to catch up.
Well, it's not just how precious water is out there in the world. It's also about how precious the water is inside our body. Every time we feel an emotion, the water that makes up 2/3 of our physical bodies is responding to these changes, and the crystals that result form accordingly, depending on the vibration or frequency that you're embodying. You know, each time we get upset about something, and we realize that's actually having an effect on the shape of the water crystals that are in our bodies, it becomes much easier then to respect our inner worlds and the water that resides inside us. And when we do that, we begin to take that respect out into our lives.
Yes, yes, absolutely. That's absolutely true. And a lot of his experiments reflect that as well. You know, it's unfortunate, but in this day and time, you know, it's so important, or we place an importance, I say we in general, to scientifically prove these things that we speak about. So I think he set about purposely to do that because there are a lot of skeptics out there, you know, that say, what do you mean, Dr. Emoto, by when you use the term the power of words? But, you know, there is a lot of power in words and intention. So his experiments and his research reflects that and proves it.
Well, that's what this show, Otherware, is dedicated to exploring as well. It's trying to find all of the connections that there are between the spiritual and scientific worlds. And Dr. Emoto is one of the key figures in the world right now who's demonstrating that irrefutably with evidence through the water crystals that he's capturing in his beautiful photographs.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And, you know, it's once you start studying the properties of water, you realize how miraculous it is, and in turn, like you stated before, how miraculous we are, you know, as perfect beings. And I think a lot of our programming teaches us that we're imperfect from birth, you know, that we come into this world with some type of horrid, you know, sin or something that we must spend the rest of our life purging, when at least my truth, what I've become aware of, is that it's quite the opposite, that we are perfect beings, capable of self-healing even. You know, if we can remove that programming, we can be allowed to exercise our perfectness and appreciate our perfectness. So his work is very important, and I think it's very timely that that the work is coming out. And he would like to train, his goal is to train 6,500 instructors like us, which, like you mentioned, there's only about 90 right now, by 2008. And he picked those numbers because of the recent information that that we were told that there is it 6.5 billion people now on Earth?
Yes.
So the 650 million, of course, is a percentage of that. And so that's where he came up with the figure.
So, Anna, you're called a Hado practitioner, that's spelled H-A-D-O. What is that word, and how can we apply Hado to our daily lives?
Well, as Dr. Emoto would explain, and as he explained to us, Hado is the Japanese word for universal vibration or energy, the energy behind creative force, the quantum field. Some may call it God or God force. And as he put it, when he calls it the quantum field, some people in science get upset over that. So he calls it Hado. Hado is the vibration that creates sound, that creates color, that creates life, the vibration that makes plants grow and thrive, for example. Hado is inherent in our daily lives. We can also, of course, enhance it in our daily lives, because sometimes, you know, we're so distracted or things are happening and we don't pay attention to it. And sometimes we're feeling the energy of other people or the energy going on around us, and we kind of lose focus of our own energy, or you know, how to utilize that energy for ourselves in, you know, throughout a day, a normal day in our lives. But we can create a higher, stronger vibration simply sending a positive thought of gratitude into our food or our water before we drink it. You know, it's, you know, the old tradition of saying a prayer before dinner. And it can absolutely make a great difference. And he shows that, you know, in his experiments.
A Swiss participant at one of Dr. Emoto's lectures said, through the photographs, I could see that the energy of our consciousness and words can change things, and we can actually see it with our eyes. This is the first and only way that this elusive energy can be viewed. We don't believe what we can't see, but the ice crystals show us everything. It's no longer about whether you believe or using this method, anyone can conduct their own experiment and prove it for themselves. And, you know, when you have got proof like this, and these ice crystals are quite clearly unique in each of their own ways because of the imprint of frequency that is in the water that formed the crystal. It's just wonderful to have these images to look at and be able to see what the intent was that was imprinted into that crystal and say, wow, I can actually prove it to myself now that this is real. Our intent is having an effect on this world in a really material way.
Yes, it's amazing. And to sit through the classes every day, I know for myself personally and at least the people sitting around me, there was 32 of us in my class, and the one they had in Hilo in February. And every day we would just spontaneously be moved. I mean, to the point of tears, you know, it was a very emotional experience. And at least once per day in something we would be seeing. I can't say that I've ever been moved to tears in an instant just from seeing a picture of something. And there would be photographs of crystals that they would show that would just, you know, move you to tears. And one thing that I found fascinating about the crystals is that they're three-dimensional. The water crystals, as they form, you can, you know, see the life of the crystal. And we looked very specifically into the life of the crystal, which very much mirrored our own lives in the sense of when it would first form in its infancy, you know, through its adulthood till it would melt back into water again. And it was just cool to observe. And like you said, takes something that we talk about and believe, but you can actually see and watch the watch it materialize and watch the transformation is quite unbelievable. It's quite an experience.
Tell me the first time that you saw Dr. Emoto's work and how you felt at the time.
I had received an email from a friend, and it's been about 2.5 years ago, that had a link to his website. And that was the first time I'd heard of it, of him and his work. And I read through and was fascinated. It's funny, some of the things that we do kind of instinctively. But one of the things I've always done since I was very young is talk to things that most people would consider inanimate objects, or, you know, like I would always talk to plants, and I would always talk to water. And, you know, my mother knew I was a little different when I was, you know, small. But then I read this and I went, well, there, you know. So there, you know, it's exciting when, you know, when something you just knew to do, you know, you can actually say, well, there you go, that's why I was doing that, and didn't realize it. So that was about 2.5 years ago, and then when What the Bleep Do We Know came out last year, of course, I was glad to see that they had showcased his work in the film.
Oh, so was I.
Yes, and in this new film that has just come out, the sequel to What the Bleep, I believe.
Down the Rabbit Hole.
Yes, and they have a little, according to Dr. Emoto, I haven't seen it yet. It's not showing, you know, in our area but they have once again showcased his work, and I believe maybe elaborated on it a little bit. So that's good news.
Well, I saw that film or documentary/film
I think, 5 times at the cinema because I took so many different people to see it.
Yes, I saw it 4 times. And every time I would see it, I would come away with something new.
Oh, I was exactly the same. And each time, much to my surprise, especially the 3rd and 4th times, each time they got to that railway platform and I saw those images illuminated again, I would just burst into tears. And it was partly because I'd read the book such a long time before I saw the movie. The ideas behind it and those images had already been imprinted into me and into my heart. So seeing them up on the big screen was just such a wonderful validation. But it's just the sheer beauty of them as well. They affect you on such deep and profound levels.
Yes, they do. They really do. You know, and it doesn't seem to matter whether, well, for me, whether the crystal formed because of a word or because of a song or because of a prayer or what, you know, the what it was that create, you know, that the water chose to create that particular form of its crystal, but it is on many, many levels, almost a reflection of our own beauty, which a lot of times we don't really see. We don't think to reflect on our own beauty and our own potential very often. And depending upon our childhoods and the way we were raised, some of us are quite a bit older or later in life before we even recognize a glimmer of our own beauty. And when we first the very first evening was only for 2 hours, and it was to introduce, you know, to meet each other and to introduce one another. And he had us all get up on the stage. And the entire course was in Japanese. And they, you know, had translators there. There were several people from Japan that joined us in Hawaii. And we would each get up, and we each had gotten up and introduced ourselves. And that was basically what my introduction was, that through Dr. Emoto's work, when I came across his work, I was well into my own personal transformation, and his work played a big part in that transformation. So I thanked him for that. I think that's one of the messages he brings forth is the gratitude, because we have a tendency to take for granted that someone else knows how thankful we are for something that, you know, they did for us, and we throw thanks out there. Oh, thanks, you know, but gratitude in expressing that explicitly to others is very, very important, and expressing our love to others as well. And in turn, it helps us express the gratitude and love to our own self, you know, through doing that. That's why his favorite crystal is the one that says love and thanks. And that's kind of his slogan that he uses, because that's his favorite crystal.
He also says that the words love and gratitude are part of the natural world. They're part of God's creation, so to speak. And other words like hate and anger are man-made words, and they therefore don't carry vibrations that create beautiful crystals like the crystals that are created when you put the intent gratitude into them. What do you think about that idea?
Oh, I absolutely agree. And I believe that was demonstrated, you know, in the school, you know, through the course of the week. What was interesting about What the Bleep Do We Know about the movie, and then, of course, Dr. Emoto's work included in that, is that it pulled together so many different works. It just pulled so many different things together that I had been researching. And one of those was, I don't know if you've heard of Dan Winter, but Dan Winter has written several pieces, and one of them had to do with going back to the original alphabet and the original language. And, of course, all we can do is go back as far as we can, you know, and as history allows us to. But that original language and original alphabet was very sacred, that the design actually of the alphabet, the letters themselves were sacred in their design. And then the pronunciation of those letters as we first formed words were very sacred. And I believe we may have lost a bit of our sacredness in our speech and the way we, you know, use language today. So I totally agree with that the origin of love and gratitude, love and thanks and thankfulness would come from God, spirit, life force, whereas a lot of the other words we use would not be. That makes total sense to me.
You're listening to a conversation about the consciousness of water with Anna Webb. When Otherware returns, we'll come back to find out what a Hado instructor is and get into some of the ways we can use water more consciously in our lives every day. But first, some music. Last week, I announced that the Miami Winter Music Conference was on and that a lot of tracks get their very first airplay for the year at some of the biggest parties there. And today, Otherware supporter King Street Sounds celebrated their 13th year in business with a massive day party on the beach called 13 Years of Paradise, with headlining acts Doc Martin, Tony Humphries and Dennis Ferrer, and a live PA from Miss Joy Cardwell. She's a fantastic vocalist from New York. I was lucky enough to see her when I was in New York a few years ago, and I'm so glad to see that she's back with this slamming track by Quentin Harris, What It Feels Like. Supporters of Otherware. It's not out until April 24th, so I can only give you a sneak peek tonight. Next week, I'll let you hear the whole track. You're hearing it live and exclusively on Otherware and bbsradio.com. Want to get your hands on some of the hottest house music around? Well, check them out on the World Wide Web at kitsounds.com. If you've just joined us, thanks for tuning in. Let's get back to our chat about the consciousness of water with Anna Webb.
Downloading Otherware.
So, as a Hado practitioner, what does that then qualify you to do?
Essentially, you know, if you recognize Hado as the vibration of life force or the universal vibration, it's like certified universal vibration instructor. Oh, what does that mean? Well, essentially one thing it means is that I can spread Dr. Murdo's work and teach his work to other people. And it's such a basic message. It's such a basic work. But like I said, I don't think we realize our own true inner power. I don't think we realize or recognize fully our interconnection into each other and the universe, if you will, or even more so than the universe, the galactic energy that we reside in. And as the Maya put it, the Maya people, you know, worlds within worlds within worlds. And what I can teach people is how to tap into that. It's very simply the power of positive manifestation of thought force.
And do you do that with water?
Water is an excellent medium to use in that. Water is an easy way to demonstrate that to people. If you have even just a large bowl of water and have it perfectly still and free from external vibrations such as buoyance or, you know, something that would interfere, where you can see that it's perfectly still. And if you take your hand, you don't even have to put your hand in the water. You can put your hand near, on top of the water, over the water, and you can see the vibration from that. Little ripples form, you know, and that's one of the easiest demonstrations of, you know, that is your, the energy coming from you that the water is picking up on.
Yes.
And then you can go from there, you know, to teach.
And how would you then use these principles in helping one manifest some of the things that they'd like to create in their lives?
I think, well, first of all, teaching people to recognize how they create. I had a difficult time on set that we create our own reality. I think maybe I was just a little angry then. That my reality at the time that I had created wasn't really good, you know. And I thought, wait a minute, what are you putting this on me for? You know, I had a hard time with that concept, and I think helping people recognize and understand that concept first is a good place to begin, you know, because we may not directly create the situations that we're in our own mind, but we have created it at least inadvertently through our intentions or our belief of what we want or need. I guess that would be the very basic place to start. And that's, you know, if we're able to recognize that and understand that, then we can shift how we perceive our futures. You know, we can begin to shift our lives, and then, of course, the people around us, their lives will be affected and shift as well. And that is, I think that's probably the basic point that I'm starting with my work.
So, Anna, if someone wanted a really practical way to apply this information into their daily lives, could you suggest a couple of really easy methods of working with water to perhaps change some of those programs inside us that we all want changing, you know, patterns that we want to remove, lessons that we need to get through?
Absolutely. There are a couple that I have actually done and tried, and it really works. If for those who drink coffee, and I know not everyone drinks coffee, but for those that do, in the morning, usually making a pot of coffee is the first thing they do. And you can take that water that you're using for your pot of coffee, and you can thank it, and you can tell it you love it, and put some positive intent into that coffee. Whatever, I always say positive intent, but, you know, most people refer to that as prayer or meditation. So whatever it means for you personally. And put that into your water when you're, you know, for your cup of coffee or your pot of coffee or your pot of tea. And that's, you know, one of the first things you do in the morning. The other thing you can do is at night when you go to bed, you can get a glass of water and set it by on your nightstand and put whatever intent into that water that you need to change in your life. for example, you can say into the water, I am going to start being more positive. I'm going to lose my negative attitude. Or I need to remove the fear of heights or whatever it is. And I'm going to do that through this glass of water. You can utilize water, you know, to do that. And if, you know, I could go into a specific, say, meditation or specific affirmation to say, you know, but you can utilize the glass of water at night and you can say, in drinking this water, I'm, you know, going to remove the old pattern and to introduce the new pattern. So you say, remove the old pattern of fear of heights, and I'm going to introduce the new pattern of, and replace that with whatever, you know, fill in the blank.
So some might say that, oh, well, you're just saying affirmations. The water doesn't have anything to do with it. And what would you say to those people?
I would say that, well, that's fine, but, you know, if you don't believe that, but the water carries it through your cells. You can utilize any of the elements, you know, earth, air, fire, and water if you wish to do affirmations. But water is the substance that can penetrate us at the cellular level. And
why?
So I would say that it makes it more powerful.
And why is that, Anna? Why does water affect us at that deep cellular level? Is water conscious?
Well, it's part, you know, we're 70% water. That, you know, water blends with us better. You can yell out an affirmation. I mean, the reason I believe totally that the reason I live in Hawaii today is because the last time I visited in 2003, I shouted out to the ocean and said, I will live here someday. I had no clue it would be in 2 years. You know, at the time, it seemed to look as possible. I meant it. I meant it with every cell in my body. I meant it.
Well,
and I shouted it out to the ocean, and the ocean brought me there. I mean, I believe that.
Yeah, I think that ocean definitely heard you. And that's one of the most incredible parts of this research, the fact that water can memorize, well, it can copy and then memorize information.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
It's made me look at water in a completely new way every time I pick up a glass or brush my teeth or wash in the shower. I'm thinking about the water. I'm not just doing whatever it is I'm doing without thinking, as I would have maybe in the past. Ever since reading The Hidden Messages in Water, now I can pick up a glass of water and actually I can appreciate the fact that it's alive. It's living.
Oh.
And when you think about it as a living thing, as liquid crystal, it's just so, I don't know, I love that thought so much, and it changes everything.
So many of his experiments reflect that very thing. And I call them experiments because that's what he calls them. And maybe there's a little bit of loss in translation there from Japanese to American, I mean to English. But because some of them I wouldn't call experiments, I would use another word. But in some of the things that he has done over the last, say, 8 years or 10 years, it's very obvious that water is a living being and is working with him, you know. I think I may have written a book that you had read in regard to one of his first experiments at the Fujiwara down in Japan. It was just he and a Buddhist priest. There was not a group of people like in most of the other experiments conducted at larger bodies of water. And they took a sample before the prayer or incantation, and then they took a sample of the water afterward, and that's one of, I believe, his most famous crystals, and also showing what it looks, the water looked like before.
Can I just get you to describe what the crystals looked like before and after?
Yes, the crystal, well, it actually wasn't a crystal before. It just looked kind of like just muddy, slurry water, you know. There was no shape to it. It didn't form crystals. It just was kind of blurry, if you will. But the crystal afterwards was quite beautiful and quite pronounced. And so my confusion, I'll just say, because there might be others listening that were confused, is does that mean that the water suddenly turned pristine? Well, no. But also, yes. There were some studies done by some scientists who discovered that at, I believe it's 200 hertz, which would be the equivalent of like a sonogram or, you know, sonic energy, that the water creates bubbles. What the scientists discovered is that the bubbles will contain or encapsulate chemicals that are in the water.
Oh, really?
Yes, and then as the bubbles burst into the air, they release the chemicals out of the water.
That's incredible.
Yes, and that was one of those wow, you know, things to learn about what they've discovered since then. What was interesting about the Fujiwara Dam experiment and the experiment at a lake in Wisconsin last year was that in both instances, there had been a person in each body of water that had drowned and where they had dredged the water and could not find the bodies. And after 1 week after the Fujiwara Dam experiment and then 3 weeks after the invocation or experiment at the body of water in Wisconsin, both bodies turned up on shore.
Yes, so, it was like the earth and the water was finally able to release them.
Yeah, exactly. And Dr. Emoto, his theory is that the bubbles created by the prayers helped to, you know, shift the body up toward the toward the shore.
Wow.
Yeah, very, very interesting.
Have you done any experiments yourself with water?
No, not purposely, not since the class. My life's been quite busy in the past few weeks, and I haven't really, since taking the course, tried that myself. But in the past, I have. There's in here in Ohio, where I'm originally from and where I am right now, my daughter's baby's due in 2 weeks, and so I'm here visiting. And there's an area called Hocking Hills, and it has ties to ancient Indian tribes here in the Ohio area. And it's one of my favorite places to go. And back in, I believe it was 2000, I visited out there and was sitting and meditating by Cedar Falls and just sitting kind of on the outskirts of the pool created by the waterfall. And I was just meditating, so my mind was clear, but I was very aware of the water at my feet. And somehow I knew that I felt like I was shining light. I just felt like I was reflecting light or shining light that day. And so I thought when I open my eyes, I'm going to see all the little fish. There's like little minnows, you know, little tiny fish in that pool. And sure enough, when I opened my eyes, it's almost like they were all facing me. And there was hundreds of them facing me, like they were waiting for me to say something. And I don't know if I was thinking that and intending that into the water, into the fish, or if I was just picking up, because my mind was free, on what was happening there. But so I'm not sure we could quantify an experiment, but it was quite fascinating.
Did Dr. Emoto say anything during the course about how soon it might be before people at home might be able to do these experiments themselves?
No, he didn't. Right now, the equipment in most all aspects of the research and the work he's done is still quite pricey.
Sorry, not only that, you need a gigantic freezer to go and
right.
stand
yeah,
in, don't
because
you?
They do take the water down very low to I believe it's minus I want to say I could look it up, minus 59 degrees Fahrenheit I believe, and it may even be colder than that. So yeah, we'd have to have a special freezer. You'd have to have the microscope with 200 times you know lens
mm-hmm.
and. Yeah. He also worked with an American to create the HOTO-R machine. It's HOTO-R. And it was very interesting. They we spent quite a lot of time learning about that. This machine can, you put your hand in a spot on the machine, and it does a reading on your HOTO energy. And through a series of codes that were developed, tried and tested and tried and tested and developed for different things like fear or like illness, you know, there's so many codes I can't even tell you exactly, you know, what each one stands for, but each one stands for something. And then what the machine will determine is for what your strengths and weaknesses are and what you need in your life, you know, to help pull it all together. And then it's based on homeopathy. And just like in homeopathy where something is diluted and diluted further and further, what this machine does then is you can take pure water and put it inside this ring and then key in the codes for what you need personally in your life. And then it imprints the water with that. And then you mix a very tiny amount in with your liter of water, you know, or however much you drink every day. And so he has been doing that. There are about 39, I believe 39, I don't have the exact figure in front of me, 39 HOTO clinics in Japan.
Oh, really?
So it's very big in Japan, yes.
Oh, that's great to hear. Well, that means it'll probably keep spreading then.
Yes. Yes, I hope so. The equipment's a little expensive still at this point, and that was what made me think of that. There's one practitioner in the U.S., and he has incorporated that into his work as a chiropractor and holistic practitioner. And then there's also some companies buying the machines for different uses. And one thing I found interesting is there's a jewelry company that specializes in diamonds. And the girl sitting next to me in class had been to this company, and you put your hand on the machine, and then they, on the other end, they take and they test each of however many diamonds you would pick out and say, okay, of these diamonds, I, you know, these are the ones I like. And it would see which one is compatible for you.
Oh, how wonderful.
Isn't that interesting?
That's amazing.
So they're finding a lot of different uses for that particular machine.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It sounds like a fascinating device. I'd love to be able to see one in front of me.
Yeah.
And be able to use it.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
Mm. So do you think you'll get to a point where you'll actually work with one of those machines as well?
I can't say, but I did think of it in regard to one thing that was of interest to me, because I had lived for a year on an organic farm here in Ohio before I moved to Hawaii, and now I'm working with a friend of ours who owns a coffee farm. So over the past 2 years, I've been involved in, agriculture, and it was just by chance. And they're using these machines for the animals as well. For example, if you want, for animals or plants or, you know, crops. They're using them in the agricultural world now to test the animals and see what the animal needs that you may not, you know, realize. Raising animals, for example, is kind of tricky. You make sure that your soil is properly, you know, your soil has the right nutrition, you know, mix or balance, and to grow the grass if you're raising, for example, grass-fed beef or cattle. So that could, you know, there are a lot of different agricultural uses that could be applied to, and that was kind of what perked me up about it. So I've got those friends here who are at the farm where I used to live. They still have a farm, and I'm going to talk to them about it, see if it's something they might want to use. You can look it up online. It's Ahato-R, as in radio. So people are starting to, you know, find different uses for these machines.
And what was Dr. Emoto like, by the way?
He is so funny. He reminded me a lot of my dad.
Really?
My dad transitioned back in 2002. Just their sense of humor. He was so funny. He loves to laugh. He loves to make people laugh. He loves to make jokes and poke fun at himself. You know, just he made it a lot of fun.
VBS Radio.com.
After this break, we're going to be travelling without moving into the world of water, once again with Anna Webb, who studied with Dr. Emoto in Hawaii in Feb to become one of the first Hado practitioners in the world. About you, but I can imagine this one being played at a disco in deep space. What do you think? Galactic disco. I like the sound of that. From Agora, a production team out of Portugal, that was a track entitled Viaje, and I believe that means to travel. You bet. You're listening to a conversation about the consciousness of water with Anna Webb.
So what can we individually do to help heal the Earth's water?
Well, individually, we can send love, of course, and gratitude into the Earth's water through positive intent or prayer. We can also share the message, which I'm doing here, thanks to you for the opportunity, because when people awaken to their true inner power, they may rely less on others to tell them what to do and intuitively know what to do. The Earth's water... many areas, as you know, are in crisis right now. And healing ourselves is the first step. Healing our own water, healing the water within ourselves. And obviously refraining from polluting water with trash or pollutants or chemicals, you know, obviously people just need to become more aware. But they really don't or won't become more aware until they begin healing themselves. And in healing themselves, I believe that will help to heal the earth's water, because, you know, they'll be more positive and more enlightened. So individually, you know, all of us live near a body of water. I mean, I can't imagine anyone that doesn't live within 30 minutes of a body of water, be it a stream or a lake or a river. And going to that body of water and just saying thank you or I love you or meditating by that body of water will help to heal that water. It'll create the bubbles that we spoke about to help that body of water rid itself of chemicals that aren't supposed to be there. And just in doing that and starting with that is absolutely a place to start. It may seem silly. It may seem insignificant, but it's not.
Well, Dr. Sheldrake, who is famous for his morphogenetic fields and morphic resonance theories, says that, you know, once morphic resonance has spread, so if you put a prayer into a body of water, for example, in New York, that the morphic field would then generate resonance that would extend into all time and space. So it would have, in other words, an instantaneous impact on all other locations, resulting in an instantaneous worldwide change. And that's a really important thing to remember, that if you heal the water in your body, it's still connected to all of the other water in the world. And it's connected to all of the other water in all of the other people. And once you start to affect that water, just the water that's inside you, it automatically affects all of the other water everywhere else. Yeah. And it's such an incredible concept to think about, but one that is very, very important and I believe absolutely real.
That's absolutely true. And in this perspective of what you just brought up, and I hate to bring this up in the conversation, but by example, it'll make sense. Dr. Moto had been measuring his tap water where he lived. Every day he would do readings. He would do readings on the mercury, the lead, and the aluminum levels. And on December 30th, 1990, the mercury level was 3, the lead level was 6, and the aluminum level in his water was 1. And his measurements would always be anywhere from minus 21 to plus 21. And on January 17th, 1991, he did his regular, you know, level testing. The mercury was 19, the lead was 16, and the aluminum 13, which was extremely high.
Oh, that is extremely high.
And he didn't understand why until he heard on the news that the Gulf War had begun and we had begun bombing Iraq. And he realized, it was like it just hit him, that because that was at the same time of his measurement that he had done that day, that the water, the tap water in Tokyo was affected by negatively by the events halfway around the world in Iraq. And so that absolutely demonstrates what you had just said, what you discussed. So positively, in order to balance this, we say, you know, work with the water in our own cells and heal the water in our own cells and heal the pond, the community pond down the street, and put the message out in the stream, and put the message out in the river, and to the lake, and let that spread, because there needs to be balance to this. And obviously, the waters in our world pick up on the negative, they will also pick up on the positive. And so every little thing that any individual can do will make a huge difference.
One of the things that I did with water once, and it was a really wonderful exercise to do. I'd never done it before, but there was a global meditation on. It was for the World Sound Healing Day that Jonathan Goldman does every year. And I participated in the meditation, and in front of me I placed a few bottles, a few glass bottles of water that were, just out of the tap. And a couple of other friends had joined the meditation, and because it was for World Sound Healing Day, we were actually toning and using the R sound. And so it's a really simple and, we did it for about 10, 15 minutes. But as we toned, we let the sound be the carrier wave for the intent of love and peace and healing that we wanted to imprint into the water. And then a day or two later, we took that water down to the river, the Yarra River down here in Melbourne, and did some more toning and threw it in. And the feeling that I got just from doing that was so satisfying and so healing for me.
Right.
And I know that it had an effect, because all of those people meditating all at once all around the world were also contributing to the blessings in that water. It wasn't just me and my couple of friends.
Right.
And now that water has gone out and touched the waters everywhere. And that's the sort of stuff that each of us can do, isn't it?
It is. It's very simple. It's very simple. I mean, water is so good to us. Water carries away our negative. One of the rituals, if you will, or rites of passage that I have used in the past when I've really been in a dire situation and needed to rid myself of attachments or feelings, that weren't healthy for me. Is to take a small stone or rock and just write that, in something that's non-toxic, of course, just write on there fear or anger or anything like that, and just toss it into the river, let the river just take it away in its flow. And similar to doing that, the opposite would be to put something positive into the water, just like you said, to either put water in there that's been charged, by people around the world. That's very powerful. And, we can all do that on a daily basis or on a weekly basis every Saturday. Pick your day and have that effect.
And every day when you're in the shower or you're having a bath, you can think of the water differently then too. I like to think of the water coming down as golden rays of light, cleansing my aura and putting gold all through my aura. And the way I feel when I step out of the shower is unbelievable. It's just a matter of shifting your perception just a little bit, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And the people in Hawaii, I have to say, I've had so many interesting conversations with people who may not have heard about Dr. Moto, and they may not be aware of the proof of the beauty in the water crystal. But because they've always lived in Hawaii, they know what the ocean can do. They know what the ocean does. And it's part of them to go to the ocean and to get in the ocean, to swim in the ocean, to snorkel, whatever it is, to surf. And or even, like you said, image it in your shower and at home or by your stream. They definitely understand the magic, I call it the magic of water, and the power of water. And I think probably peoples of the earth who do live near the water, either on islands or coastal communities, and they're very much aware of what water does. Water is a part of them. They don't like to be far from it ever, So.
Are you feeling a bit homesick for Hawaii right now?
Yes, I am. We got 4 inches of snow here yesterday. I was not happy.
Oh, I can imagine.
It's very pretty, and I love the snow, but
whew, it was cold.
So can you tell us a little bit about your life in Hawaii, Anna? Because besides your Hado practitioner training or instructor training, you do many other things, and I'd love to know a bit more about you.
Well, thank you, Liz. I've had quite an interesting life. I moved to Hawaii back in August last year, and it was one of those totally magical opportunities that presented itself. And I think, of course, like I said, it was a manifestation of what I yelled out to the ocean in 2003. But we have a friend that owns a coffee farm, and she's, I guess, in April it'll be 2 years. So I've been helping her with the marketing aspects of that as she's growing. She started out fairly small, and now she's acquired another farm or two close by. And so I've been working with her on the marketing of her coffee and the business aspects of the process flow, the business, and so forth, which is what I've done about for the past 23 years is worked in marketing and sales. So that's kind of like my day job, if you will, kind of right up my alley.
And in 2004, you took the intuition training at the Edgar Cayce Foundation through the Association for Research and Enlightenment out of Virginia Beach in Virginia. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the Edgar Cayce Foundation is located in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and they have an excellent group of people who do seminars and workshops around the U.S., I think around the world, actually. And I had the pleasure of working with them specifically in with intuition training. And it's funny because I've been blessed with gifts that I've had since I was young, but never really formally, if you will, worked on those. And so I took the opportunity to go to the intuition training, which essentially, you know, it taught me to meditate, how to meditate, because I would either fall asleep or, you know, I wasn't meditating properly, and it all comes from breathing. You know, breathing is the key to being able to truly meditate, effectively meditate, I should say. And also that allows, when you free your mind, to tap into your intuition, your gift of insight, I guess I would call it. And they teach you, they encourage you to blurt, you know, just blurt it out, say whatever comes, you know. And I think sometimes we hold ourselves back. You know, sometimes we'll be with a friend, and especially with a close friend, someone we're close to that we know, and you'll want to say something so bad because you just know, but then you hold yourself back because you don't want to be insulting or, you know, how would they, you know, what are they going to think of you? And that experience with the Edgar Cayce Foundation taught me to, you know, just go with your instinct. You know, don't hold yourself back. Don't be intimidated. You know, don't be afraid. And share with people how you feel. And you only get, you know, well, I don't know that I believe we only get one shot, but at least right now in the life we're in, we only have one shot to tell people how we really feel. And to help them, why would we question something that needs to be said to someone? You know, if we're the messenger, if we happen to be the messenger of the moment, at that very moment, we don't need to be holding that back. And that's what working with them taught me, and it was an invaluable gift.
Well said.
You can, I don't know the exact website address, but you can, anyone that wants, you could do a search on the Edgar Foundation and go to their website.
So what do you think the overall effect of all of this training has been on your work?
It's the approach that's different now because I'm different. So I may have had more of a traditional marketing approach, whereas now I look at it more in a more holistic way, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of people now working very conscious world of business and bringing their holistic attitudes into the business arena. And it's great to hear that you're doing the same thing. And, you know, working in Hawaii, it's the perfect environment, isn't it?
It doesn't seem like work. It really doesn't seem like work.
You know, Hawaii is one of those places right now that seems to be a magnet for light workers.
Oh, it is. It's interesting.
What are your experiences of that world in Hawaii? I know that there are conventions happening all the time, workshops and lectures from visiting lecturers and authors.
And music.
Oh, and music.
Oh, and so much music. You know, oh, that's, I have to, as you were talking, yes, yes, all of the other and all of the above too, but music, there is such cool music there. And the people that are drawn there to, that bring their music. And, like, just the whole gamut, too. Like, I think John Mayall was there back in February, and I didn't get to go. And, you know, so a lot of the older musicians who are still doing their thing very selectively, you know, will show up there. But even in the local communities down in our area where we live, there's drumming every Sunday on the beach, and they have the, it's like a dance every Sunday morning. It's kind of like church meditation beforehand, or do like a chakra meditation, and then there's no talking. It's just self-expression through dance. It's great, though. I mean, just feeling. It's almost like it comes from somewhere else, too.
Mm.
It's a very interesting experience.
Do you believe that Hawaii is part of ancient Lemuria?
I really do. I sensed that the first time I was in Hawaii. It was in 2001, and I was just laying on the beach, face down, you know, out in the sun, and had stuck my hands way down in the sand and stuck my feet down in the sand, and I was just laying there. And I could feel a pulse, but it wasn't my pulse because it was offbeat, you know, it was different than my pulse. And I raised my head up and I was like, wow, you know, that's really strong. Where's that coming from? And I realized it was Earth, you know, like the Earth's energy. And within about a minute, probably, my pulse synced up with it.
Of course.
So it was amazing. And I thought to myself, okay, this just, you know, this isn't just anywhere. There's something special about this place, and there is. There's quite an energy there.
Yeah, there really is. Yeah. Anna, given your training with Dr. Emoto and your life experience, if you had a message to give to the Other Way audience, what would it be?
Oh, wow. That's an unloaded question. I don't know. I would encourage people to do what I've done, which is to follow your heart and follow where you're being led right now, because we are all being, I'll just use the words that I use and let it fall where it may, but I believe we're all, you know, many of us are being called to do certain work in certain places. And like you said, some of us, there seems to be a big call to Hawaii. I keep meeting people there every day that say, I'm not sure why I'm here, but here I am. The opportunity came up, and here I am, and they're not sure. And so just don't question it. I mean, you know, that's what I've done, and I've taken some big steps. I took some big steps, you know, in regard to my personal life of my family, to be where I believe I'm supposed to be right now, doing what I believe I'm supposed to be doing, and kind of just flying by the seat of my pants and following my instincts and what I'm being told, if you will, or guided to do. And I would just encourage everyone to do that.
Thank you, Anna. I think if Dr. Emoto's work has anything to teach us, it's the fact that when we get in touch with our feelings and our intuitive abilities and we trust them, we can really create wonderful changes in our lives and in the lives of others and in the world itself. And I think that Dr. Emoto's work is really wonderful in demonstrating that, because you know when you love, you know what that feels like. But Dr. Emoto can show you a water crystal of what that looks like. You've got these crystals to show you that everything you think, everything you feel, every act you do has a frequency or a vibration that then goes out into the world and has an effect. And it's your responsibility to choose which vibration you want to align yourself with.
Yes, it absolutely creates the symphonic harmony of the universe. And I'd like to give a quick example, because exactly what you're saying happened during the week at the school, and it was a very simple thing, and so hopefully people will get it from this example. I was running one of the since I lived there local, I had my car there, and you know, so I would help people if they needed to go somewhere and get something. So at lunchtime, I was running one of the women there to get more videotape, because she had videotaped the entire class or the entire school. And so another girl said, "Oh, if you're going to the store, please pick me up some batteries." And I said, "Okay." And so she gave me the money. And we got there, and so I was looking at the batteries, and she needed four batteries. There was one pack of four, but then there was a special in a pack of four with a flashlight. It came with a little small flashlight. And I thought, well, for 50 cents more, she can get the flashlight. So I went ahead and bought that. You know, I wasn't sure. I thought, well, maybe I shouldn't, but I said, no, I'll trust myself, and got that. 2 days later, we went up to Mauna Kea, up to the telescopes up on top of Mauna Kea, which is up at 13,000 feet. And the flashlight, she didn't have a flashlight with her. And that was the same kind of flashlight that you use in order to see, because they have to be red flashlights. They're very conscientious on the Big Island. All of the street lights are either yellow or red, so that it won't create too much light to interfere with the huge telescopes up there on Mauna Kea.
Oh, wow, some good city planning.
Yeah, how about that? And so, but she didn't bring her flashlight because she second-guessed herself. So, boy, did we have conversation about that. That was interesting. And it was how, like, you know, everybody's little part plays into the picture.
Yeah.
So if you're trusting, if everyone's trusting themselves and following their vibrations, like you said, it all creates this harmonic choir, you know?
Hmm.
And even if it doesn't, it's just the tune changes a little bit, you know, because we have free will, obviously. But if everybody's following their instincts, then it creates a most beautiful song. And I think also through the water, the vibration of water, that you know, carries our song even further.
Well, Anna, it's been such a pleasure to speak to you. Thank you for such an enlightening conversation.
Oh, thank you, Liz. Thank you very much.
Much luck with all of your work in the future. If people would like to get in touch with you, how might they do that?
I can give you my email address. It's electricwind, all one word, @earthlink.net. I'm going to be giving a 50-minute presentation on Dr. Emoto's work and Messages from Water on April 8th and 9th in Cincinnati, Ohio, at the Victory of Light Psychic Festival in Sharonville. And then I'm also going to be doing we can call it a workshop or a seminar, whichever, 2 weeks later on Earth Day, and I hope to get a large gathering together at the Ohio River to do what we were talking about, which is send a message of peace and love and healing into the Ohio River so that it can go down through the Mississippi into the Gulf of Mexico, which, of course, is bruised and battered from last year's, for 2 years, strong hurricanes, and hopefully affect, you know, some healing in that respect. So I would welcome people's emails, and am open to seminars. I'm going to be having some also in Hawaii in the upcoming 6 months, the next 6 months, to where people can come, and I'll have them in a place where they can also stay if they wish to come to the workshop or seminar. They can come and stay as well. That would be exciting.
Brilliant. Thanks again, Anna. Once again, best of luck with everything, and keep spreading the hidden messages in water.
Hope you enjoyed our interview with Anna Webb. If you'd like to check out more of Dr. Emoto's work, then please go to the web at www.hado.net. That's HADO.net. After this break, we'll be back for the final portion of the show, Progressive Yoga Relaxation. And this week, we'll be using water in our visualization for personal and planetary healing. So stay tuned. Time for me to sign off for another week, but before I go, I'd like to let you know that next week on the show we'll be exploring sacred sounds with two of Australia's best sound healers, Carmen Warrington and percussionist David Jones. They'll be bringing a fabulous assortment of crystal bowls and Tibetan metal bowls and other assorted instruments into the studio with them, so we can hear the beautiful resonance they create when they're played and hear for ourselves how these frequencies can facilitate healing. Thanks once again for listening. Have a wonderful week ahead. I'm Liz Miller, and I hope that you join me again next week. If you would like to take part in the relaxation and become a member of the Otherware Circle of Lights, find a quiet place, somewhere free from distractions and comfortable, where you won't be disturbed for the next 20 minutes. Or please come back to this later in the archives if you're working or driving right now. And now, if you're ready, you can either sit in a comfortable but straight-backed chair or lie on your back, on the floor if possible. If you lie on the floor, use a blanket, beach towel, or yoga mat. It's good to use the same surface each time, incorporating it as part of your meditation sanctuary. If you lie down, you may like a pillow or bolster under your knees to take the pressure off your lower back. Then cover yourself so that you're warm and get settled. Place your arms a few inches away from the sides of your body, close your eyes, and squeeze your shoulder blades together a little, opening up the chest, allowing your hands to rest about 6 to 8 inches away from your body. Turn the palms up and let your fingers curl. Then incline your chin towards your chest and flatten out the back of your neck. Let your feet flop to the sides and be loose, so that all the way from the toes up to the tops of your legs, the muscles can turn out and give in. Breathe slowly, and then let your focus be on your breath. Notice it flowing in and out. Slowly and rhythmically. Feel your tongue resting now behind your lower teeth. and let your jaw give in. Open your eyes and then very lightly close them once again, allowing your eyes to float down over your eyelids. Then observe as your eyes sink down into their sockets. Now they don't need to work, so let them release and let go. Observe how all of the tiny muscles around your eyes, your forehead, your cheeks and your mouth are beginning to soften and smooth out so that your skin is beginning to grow plump and the tiny lines are being erased, your skin beginning to resemble the smoothness of porcelain. Breathe slowly and rhythmically, and as you continue to observe your breaths, if you find stray thoughts about the past, present or future showing up, be at peace with them. They're a part of you. Just acknowledge them and tell them gently that you don't want to spend time with them right now. You can use a visual image like pushing them gently behind you, like you're swimming, clearing the path in front of you. Take a deep breath in now and gather up all of the busyness and activity of the week. And as you exhale, sigh the breath out. See yourself pushing through the water, clearing the path. Again, drawing a deep, long breath in. Feeling the chest and lungs expanding and sighing the breath out. And this time, take the breath in as a cleansing breath. Inhaling, holding the breath. And as you exhale, give in completely. Feel your whole body releasing and softening, letting go more and more. Now take your awareness to the back of your head and neck and feel the support beneath you. Let your head grow heavy and sink deeper into that support. Now take your attention to your shoulders and your back. And allow all of the muscles to spread out and release any tension that they might be holding. Notice your arms giving in and also growing heavy. Allow all of the muscles that line your spine to also release and let go. Your hips and thighs softening, backs of the knees letting go, calves, ankles, feet, toes, release. And now your whole body is beginning to really let go. As you breathe, feel the breath coming into your body slowly, deeply, and naturally, allowing the chatter of your mind to become calm and quiet. Feel your mind becoming clear and spacious. As spacious as the sky, and your thoughts just like puffy clouds drifting in and out, until finally your mind is free and clear, open and empty. As you listen to the sound of my voice, this is your time to be quiet, time to be carried along with this beautiful daydream. And now that your body feels relaxed, let's begin our work by joining together at the heart and forming the Otherwhere circle of light. Remember that visualization is just the act of directed imagination. See yourself as a point of light within a string of lights that spans our world, formed by all of the listeners of the show in all of the different time zones. Now focus your attention at your heart, the seat of your love and your compassion. And continue to breathe, noticing the light, sensing your light within your heart, and in any way that you can, sense that the energy and light at your heart is now connecting to all of the other hearts in the Otherwhere circle of lights. Be open to receiving love and sending your love out to the others in our circle. Notice any impressions that you receive and trust them. And then visualize the web that connects our circle to all of the other hearts everywhere around the world, connecting us at the core of our beings. And continue to breathe, feeling your body melting, releasing, letting go and giving in. Place yourself resting against a rock, alone on a mountaintop, free from the troubles, obligations, and worries of everyday life. Recognize that there is nothing around you except the sounds and sights of nature, the trickle of a stream, the whisper of a soft, gentle breeze, the trees and the sky and the sun, which feels warm on your skin. Look around you and breathe in the air and your majestic surroundings. To the side of the mountain, see a deep, wide, slowly moving river nearby. Feel yourself being drawn to the water and begin to make your way to it. As you near it, you notice how gentle, yet consistent, the movement of the water is. It is peaceful, yet energetic. And at the bottom of the mountain, the mouth of the river merges into a still and quiet lake. Begin to walk along the riverside, hearing the sounds crunching under your feet, mingling with the bubbling of the water as it winds its way down the mountain. Up ahead of you, see a wooden rowboat that has been lined with blankets and cushions. You know it is yours. So, gently board your private boat and feel your body melting into the blankets and cushions as you let the river carry you down the mountain. As you wind your way down the mountain, feel your boat being guided into the middle of the current. Feel the current moving slowly, taking you and your boat along with it. You feel the water supporting you as you continue to let the river take you safely to the still and serene lake below. Notice your tension releasing itself into the stream. Focus only on letting go of your body's tension and drifting with the current. As you make your way down, if you find that there are any distracting thoughts or worries, put them in a box and toss them over the side of your boat. As you float, know that the river will take you exactly where you need to go. Let go of your controls and let the river make all of the turns for you, floating so peacefully, being carried along, letting go of anything that's holding you back, letting go of your sadnesses, letting go of your pain. Know that the very fact that you have imagined your tension floating away with the river's current makes it possible and real. Your tension is being released. It has been released. And you feel light and relaxed, completely at peace. Let the water carry you and cleanse you as you feel yourself giving in and letting go more and more and more. Notice how serene and motionless the surface is. Its surface, like glass, is so smooth that it can cast a perfect image of yourself. Align yourself now with your higher self. And as you rest on the surface of the lake, feel yourself expanding, growing in size, and place yourself in gratitude to the water, sending your love and thanks into the lake, as well as your wishes for planetary peace and healing. Send all of these intentions into the water, knowing that all of the world's water will register it. And now begin to associate your mind with the characteristics of the lake as we move into the quietness. Let your mind be still, quiet, and motionless. And when we return, know that you will bring back these wonderful feelings of deep and lasting peace as we move deeper into the quietness. Allow yourself to give in and let go, moving deeper and deeper and deeper. Thank you. wonderful feelings from the relaxation, but know that the feelings that you've created will stay with you long after the relaxation has ended. Feel your breath beginning to deepen, and as it does, welcome the breath back into your body, welcoming the life force that it brings, and the feeling of renewal, the feeling of being revitalized and rejuvenated. Feel your fingers and toes beginning to wake up. Ease your head from side to side very gently. Wake up your neck. And when you are ready, you can take your arms back behind you and stretch. Open up the body, and you can open your eyes and come back. And may you all have a joyful and peaceful week ahead.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandsir.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.